Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you know, we've been talking on the station all week about how Monday marked 6 months since Sandy hit, and, you know, looking at the area 6 months later in all kinds of ways. And remember, even if you were well away from the floodwaters, chances are if you drive a car, you have some pretty vivid memories of waiting in line for gasoline. So why did it take so long for political leaders to step in and limit purchases? Is it because rationing is so distasteful? My next guest would like to change that. Stan Cox has been on the show before to talk about air conditioning and its environmental impact. He's a senior scientist at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, and his new book is Any Way You Slice It, The Past, Present, and Future of Rationing. Welcome back to WNYC. Stan, can you hear me? Oh, I think Stan Cox can't hear me. Can he hear me? Well, listeners, have you experienced rationing here or elsewhere in the world? What's your sense of how it worked? You could call us at 212-433-WNYC. Do you think there's anything that should be rationed that isn't today, or anything that is being rationed that we just don't label accurately? 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Stan Cox, I think you can hear me now, right?
Yes, Brian.
Hey, so you start your book with the gas lines on 9/11 that you saw in Kansas. But there was no gas shortage on 9/11, was there?
Right. That was the strange thing about it. There were gas lines all over the country. Stations were charging $5, $8 a gallon. It showed how fragile our economy is, that we that an incident can cause make the very first thing that we think about access to a limited resource.
The advance of capitalism was supposed to be that the markets could allocate goods and services better than any centrally controlled government. But there are exceptions to that, including, I guess, in that case of gasoline and 9/11 in Kansas, panics.
That's right. And even when the market is working very well, or at least according to its own rules, you have, for example, health-conscious people in the United States bidding up the price of quinoa, the South American traditional grain, so that now in the quinoa-growing areas in Bolivia, people can't afford it and are having to eat white flour and so forth.
How does that work? Why would it be that farmers who grow quinoa cannot afford to serve it on their own plates for their own families?
Well, some of the farmers can probably set some aside, but with the huge demand now worldwide for quinoa, they've increased their production, but still they can get a good price for it by sending it off, and so exporting it from the country. And people living in the cities can't afford to pay that price, so they don't get it.
So that's an example of a kind of perversity of the market. Does it imply a need for rationing of any kind?
Well, my argument in the book is that rationing isn't a kind of first-line remedy for these things, but that if we do decide as a society that we cannot have unlimited consumption of resources and we put a lid on that, then these disparities are going to be sharpened even more, and we'll find, as we found as a society in wartime and at other times when there was a limitation on how much we can consume, that the only fair course is fair shares rationing.
I think when people in this country think of rationing, they probably think of two things first. One was World War II, when because the war was on and there was a shortage of materials and all kinds of things that were needed to fight the war, things wound up being rationed. And the other is the old Soviet Union or North Korea today, where the government imposes rationing as part of its central economic planning, and the result is shortages.
Well, actually, the famous images of the bread lines in the Soviet Union and all of that was not the result of rationing. In fact, they didn't have, after the 30s, they didn't have official explicit rationing there, and so they ended up with rationing by queuing because they simply had a shortage of things like bread at times. And that's the same thing that we saw in the 1970s when we had fist fights in the long gas lines. And after Sandy, y'all saw it in your area, that rationing by queuing was the immediate result of a shortage that then was partially addressed by rationing by license plate number. But that was also something that was used in the 70s. It's not, it's a good way to sort of establish order, but it doesn't really reduce overall consumption very much.
What about with health care? You saw in the debate over Obamacare how unpopular the concept of rationing is. People said, oh, this is going to lead to rationing. This is the government rationing your health care. But people on the other side push back and say, we have rationing through the market today. If there are 45 million Americans who don't have health insurance, that's largely because the market rations them out of it. How do you view that whole debate?
Well, that's exactly right. The way we do rationing now in the healthcare system is by discriminating against people, and it's well documented that people with no insurance or inadequate insurance receive less health care and less quality health care than other people do. The alternative to that is to discriminate against less effective drugs and treatments and say, okay, everybody has universal access to necessary range of drugs and treatments, but there are some that are not, that nobody needs and nobody's going to get. And that's where systems like those in the United Kingdom, Oregon, et cetera, at times have run into a buzzsaw of opposition because we have a feeling in this country that if somebody has invented a drug or a procedure, then everybody must have access to it. And where technology is driving us into the poorhouse, and now we've got medicine taking 18% of the entire economy.
Folks, we'll take a few of your phone calls on the history or future of rationing right now, or the right of the wrong of it as applied to any good or service. For Stan Cox, author of the new book called Any Way You Slice It, The Past, Present, and Future of Rationing, 212-433-WNYC. And Patrick in East Village, rationing in Germany in the housing market?
Well, yeah, my question was just about, you know, if it is in the interest of a government, of this government, of the U.S., to encourage responsible use of energy, the only system that really does that right now is the idea of this LEED certification, which is kind of a halo effect that sort of makes people feel eco-conscious if they buy a LEED-certified apartment or a LEED-certified building, you know, where they locate their business.
Right. It's kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval for environmental building design.
Correct. And in Germany, what they do is sort of a reverse of that, where you can do whatever you want with your energy, but you're only going to get a certain amount based on what you state the use of your property to be, the number of employees or how many people are in your family. And you can, you know, you could be a very efficient user of your energy or a very inefficient user of your energy, but you're only going to get so much. So it is kind of, as your guest said, you know, if you don't ration certain things that are finite, they get rationed by the marketplace.
Stan Cox, is that a good example with LEED certification?
Right. That's a good example of a statement once made by the ecological economist Herman Daly, who I'm paraphrasing, but he said that if taking the efficiency-first approach, which you might see the LEED approach as, that makes frugality seem less necessary, whereas if you take the frugality-first approach, that is saying everybody for their home gets only this much electricity, then you automatically induce efficiency. People figure out ways to save energy. So as long as everybody knows that there are fair rules applying to everyone else, people can adapt to that much more easily than they can to just exhortations, you need to be more efficient.
Joe in Far Rockaway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay.
Good. So my problem is that the whole idea of talking about this as rationing is distorting the subject. This is economics is the study of the allocation of scarce resources, and that's what you're talking about, is that you can't, everybody can't have a beachfront home. So that's what economics is. You can't, and by saying that it's rationing, you're politicizing something that's just a basic transaction or the way that the system works.
Stan Cox, is that a fair characterization? Rationing is just an epithet for economics?
Well, that's one reason I wrote the book and put rationing in the subtitle. People had said, look, it's good to talk about this stuff, but just talk about allocation and so forth. Don't use the R word. But because it's a favorite word of the Heartland Institute and other groups that are wanting us to do nothing about climate change.
Conservative think tanks.
Right. And politicians and so forth, that's the big scare word they use. Well, if we do anything, we're going to have rationing. I decided to take the approach to say, okay, you think rationing, that is fair shares rationing, is that really the worst thing that could happen? What about global ecological breakdown or other things? So to look at ration in the different types of rationing, from what economists call the rationing function of price to rationing by coupon, to look at the range of the ways in which we ration and make it not seem so scary.
So to finish up, you write that environmentalists are the ones calling for rationing. Economists tend to dismiss it as unworkable. Is this book your effort to make them take another look?
That's right. Yeah, I think to instead of just having rationing be some poorly defined scary thing that looms out in the future, to talk about the mechanisms and the way we've done it in the past and the present and how we might do it better in the future.
Stan Cox, author of Any Way You Slice It, The Past, Present, and Future of Rationing. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Since rationing started, baby, you just take your stuff and hide. They reduced my meat and sugar, and rubber's disappearing fast. You can't ride no more with Papa, 'cause Uncle Sam wants my gas. I got the ration blue, blue as I can be. For me, I've got
Jordan with the World War II era ration blues.